All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. What day is it? Happy Wednesday, everybody. Today's November 5th. Remember the 5th of November, 2025. And our top story this morning, we got ourselves a global chip sell-off going on, or at least we did yesterday and into overnight in Asia, where it got particularly severe. Now we appear to be coming off of that. The dip buyers may be showing up to work today. We'll just have to wait and see when the opening bell rings. Asian stocks got clobbered overnight. They did pare their losses. So what happened? It all started, in my opinion, earlier this week with the 13F filing and all the attention that Dr. Michael Burry got of Big Short fame for announcing in his 13F filing that he was short NVIDIA and Palantir. I went on the Coffee and a Mike podcast yesterday with my friend Mike Ferris. Shout out to Mike. Thank you so much for having me on, where we went through some of the things Dr. Burry has posted on Twitter and some of the cryptic tiptoeing around, beating around the bush that he's doing about his positioning there. But Burry's story followed right into Palantir's earnings, which were phenomenal, but the stock got clobbered anyway because nosebleed valuations. And that kind of got people talking about the bubble. And then that continued after the close yesterday. We got earnings from AMD and Supermicro. Now, AMD earnings, much like Palantir, were really good. Fantastic growth, beats on the top and bottom line, but they guided just a little bit light and the stock got clobbered for it. Again, a victim of its own valuations. Supermicro Computer, on the other hand, posted an absolutely abysmal quarter. And look, after everything we've learned about Supermicro Computer in the last few years, if you're still bullish on this stock, you need to have your freaking head examined. Congratulations. I hear being insane is actually really fun, but I wouldn't know. My God, what a decrepit, wretched hive of scum and villainy Supermicro Computer is. That stock is down this morning as well. We've got bubble jitters in the semiconductor space. But again, there's signs of life, all right? The bubble jitters, they hit their peak last night and were off of those lows. We had the South Korean index, the KOSPI, triggered circuit breakers at one point, ended up coming back, bouncing off of those lows, but still closing down 2.9% for a national index. The Korean currency took a hit as well. The Japanese index, the Nikkei, down 4% at its low, 4% in change. Again, paired those losses. Ended up closing down 2.5%, but it was a bludgeoning for tech stocks in Korea and Japan yesterday. SoftBank, big Japanese financier of data centers in the AI boom, that stock is down about 8% this morning. Masa-san is trying to come up with money to pay for these silly Stargate projects and the round tripping. We've even got Deutsche Bank is in the news this morning. They're looking for a way to hedge their exposure to data center debt. Oh, you loan money to build out big, giant supercomputers that there's really no use for beyond accounting fraud, and now you're like, crap, what do we do with all this debt on our books? Well, good luck with that one. Now, that being said, we got some payroll data today. Besides everything going on with the AI bubble and the chip stocks here, ADP private payrolls came out just moments ago. The U.S. economy added 42,000 private sector jobs for the month of October. Okay, that's better. That is a lot better than last month's dreadful number, which was negative 32,000. We actually got an upward revision to that September non-farm payroll, not non-farm. This is private payrolls. That September private payrolls was revised up to negative 29,000. So, okay, 42,000 versus a loss of 29,000 the month before. That's much better, obviously, but still not good enough. I would not call this a good jobs report. By any measuring stick, the economy needs to add about 100,000 jobs a month just to keep up with population growth. And so unemployment is rising in this environment. And look, guys, ADP, this is the best data we have available right now because the government shut down, the longest one in history. We're not going to get non-farm payrolls again for the second month in a row. So I guess we're just going to have to go off of ADP. Again, not good data. It's not awful. It's not as awful as we were last month. Last month was really bad, but we're off those lows. Still not good enough. By the way, we've got IBM announcing thousands of layoffs this morning. Another anecdote about layoffs. Of course, they're trying to blame it on AI and streamlining and productivity enhances. They misspelled H-1B visas and outsourcing, but I digress. We've also got some stories about the trade truce this morning. It appears to be holding. The Chinese are rolling back some of their retaliatory measures, export controls and sanction entity lists and the like. So for now, trade seems to be getting better. We got McDonald's earnings came out. Now, the headline is saying McDonald's was a miss, but the stock is up. We got solid same-store sales growth both here in the U.S. and overseas. McDonald's is adding stores. That being said, the CEO is flagging a challenging environment, but McDonald's continues to double down on things like value meals, discounts, and promotions to drive sales. It seems to be working. Now contrast that with a company like Cava, that's a fast casual restaurant. They reported earnings, cut their sales outlook. That stock is down big. A lot of talk in that conference call about weak consumers, particularly young consumers, Gen Z, not eating out. They can't afford it. The unemployment rate for Gen Z is double the national average, and it shows in Cava's earnings. Another interesting thing that they're mentioning, their CEO called out a lack of sales in the D.C. area. The government shutdown, people not getting their paychecks, showing up in restaurant sales in Washington, D.C. That is an interesting one, and it's a reminder, guys, this government shutdown will impact the economic data besides not getting any. I mean, when the data comes back, all that government spending, government contractors, government employees not getting paid. Well, if they're not getting paid, they're not out there consuming. And government spending drives a lot of our GDP. It's debt spending, and it's a problem in the long run. And, you know, all the commentary about the reckless fiscal situation. Yeah, I get it. But at the end of the day, that government spending is part of GDP. So that's not going to look so good either. We talked about the IBM layoffs. We'll also talk about a little bit of the takeaways from election night. Republicans got their clock cleaned. Any way you look at it, guys, Republicans just didn't show up yesterday. The Democrats, their base was energized, and they won pretty much across the board. But there was one very big election that the Republicans won, even if they're not calling it a win for Republicans. We got to talk about that one. Guys, we got a lot of news to talk about today. How about we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance this morning. Don't forget that like button. And you new guys, hit that beautiful subscribe button right next to it so you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads, because we do this one every day. Oh, that's good stuff. That wake up juice, it hits hard in the morning. Gotta love it. S&P 500 up 5 points, a measly 5 points, 0.07%. But you know what? Let's take this for the win that it is for stocks, because we got all kinds of headlines, global chip sell-off, stocks add to losses, and the S&P is positive, all right? So maybe the dip buyers are in charge here. We bottomed out around 6 a.m. We were set to open lower. Now we have rallied, and we are back in positive territory. Will it hold? Only time will tell. The Dow is up by 98 points, 0.21%, also well off the lows of the morning, and the NASDAQ is up 12 points or 0.05%, lagging a little bit from those losses in chips, but stocks are up across the board. Hence the bull in the thumbnail this morning, despite the bearish title. It was a hard one to call this morning. The DXY, meanwhile, is higher by 10 basis points, 100.31. Again, a stronger dollar. The South Korean won is contributing to this one this morning. We had the South Korean currency weaken on the worries of the AI bubble and the sell-off in chip stocks. That's pushing the Dixie a little bit higher this morning. Looking over at the bond market, we've got yields are a little bit higher here. The 30-year Treasury, 4.698. That is higher by almost 3 points. The 10-year yield is up by 2.5 points at 4.113. The 2-year at 3.592, up just a fraction of a point. And the 1-month is down 0.5 point at 3.935. Not a lot happening in bonds this morning, but there was one interesting development here. I want to look at the SOFR rate, the secured overnight financing rate. We've been talking about that one a lot this morning. It came in at 4.00 this morning, a 13 basis point drop, and we have now settled lower than we were on October 30th before that spike at the end of the month to 4.22, and then yesterday we were down to 4.13. So we're back lower than we were before that spike at the beginning of the week. I want to send a shout out to Joe Brown from Heresy Financial, who came on the channel yesterday. We were talking about liquidity, about some of the early warning signs that stress is building in the financial plumbing, and that the Fed is probably going to be starting the money printer up again soon here. And one of the things Joe said is he was saying, I wouldn't put too much worry and too much stock in that SOFR spike. He thought it was just window dressing at the end of the month. And, well, that drop from 4.13 to 4.00 kind of vindicates Joe's theory there that that SOFR spike was nothing to worry about earlier this week. So check out that interview I did with Joe. It's in the feed. Looking over at the commodities board right now, we've got gold is higher this morning. In particular, London gold is higher by $47.23, 1.2% higher for spot shiny at $3,979. Now, the other thing I would point out, look at the December gold futures, $3,989. That is also higher by not as much, about $29, maybe $30 higher this morning, or 0.75%. The gap between, or the contango between December futures and the London spot market is only $10 for gold. Watch that here, guys. When we saw the New York price dip below the London price, or I should say the London price rise above the New York price in silver, that started that rip your face off rally in silver that happened in September and October. And it looks like gold is flirting with those levels as well. Now, looking over at the spot silver market, $48.40. That's up by 88 cents or a 1.87% higher this morning. Also more than the New York price for silver, December front month contracts, 47.82. That's up 53 cents or 1.13%. We've got 18 cents of backwardation, if you will, right now between silver in London and silver in New York next month. The London price just a little bit higher than the New York price, still indicative of short-term liquidity stress in silver markets, although prices are obviously way down from the highs that we saw last month. Either way, I like the shiny. Copper is lower by a couple of penny or a fraction of a penny this morning, essentially unchanged. Platinum is off by a dollar, 0.06% lower. Palladium's up by about $20, 1.5%. And WTI crude oil is down by about 0.75%, 44 cents a barrel lower, $60.12. For December WTI futures. Looking over at the Bitcoin market, we've got, I tell you, it was a rough start of the week for Bitcoin. We're off our lows now, $102,777 as priced on Coinbase. All right, we bounced a little bit, guys. We went as low overnight. We had a 98 handle at one point. I think we went down to about 98,800 at one point was the lowest I saw. We did bounce off that level. We're a little bit higher now. I would also add that's pretty much the same level we bottomed out at back in June when we hit our previous low. Stop with the pop-ups already, TradingView. So look, watch that 98 threshold there, guys. We take that out. There's a lot of gap between that and the next support level. If we don't hold 98,000, it's looking like 75,000. The lows from April would be the next support line here. Look. Guys, been talking about it for a while. Crypto winter is here. I'm not going to reiterate this every day. Just be careful on leverage. And look, we had some commentary on the sell-off yesterday here in Bloomberg. Bitcoin shaken by long-term holders dumping $45 billion. They're attributing this one to long-term holders selling, not a sudden mass liquidation. Bitcoin has been falling again, but unlike in the last month's sell-off, it's not leverage breaking the market. The original cryptocurrency fell by as much as 7.4% on Tuesday to dip below 100,000 mark for the first time since June. That's down more than 20% from the record high reached a month ago. Bitcoin recovered 1.7% Wednesday morning in New York, although some option traders are wagering on further declines. If October's crash was about forced selling, the current drawdown may reflect something more sobering, conviction eroding. Longtime Bitcoin holders have offloaded around 400,000 Bitcoin over the past month. An exodus of about $45 billion that's left the market unbalanced, according to Marcus Thielen, head of 10X Research. Over 319,000 Bitcoin has been reactivated in the past month, meaning it was sitting idle in a wallet for 6 to 12 months. Now it's finally moving, maybe going from cold storage to a Coinbase account or cold storage to Robinhood to be sold. Suggesting significant profit taking since mid-July, said Vet Lund, head of research at K33. While some reactivation stems from internal transfers, much reflects real selling. Unlike the cascading wipeouts that triggered the October swoon, the current slide has been led by a steady drumbeat of selling in the spot market. That marks a significant shift from a pattern crypto traders have come to expect lately, where sudden bursts of volatility are typically driven by liquidations in futures markets. Roughly $2 billion in crypto positions were liquidated over the past 24 hours, according to CoinGlass. That's modest compared to the $19 billion in forced unwindings that punctuated last month's crash. Open interest in Bitcoin futures remains subdued, and options traders have been placing downside bets through put contracts targeting the 80,000 level. So a little more of an orderly sell-off here, not panic selling. That's an important distinction between what happened yesterday and that October crash in Bitcoin. All right, let's talk about ADP payrolls. They were better, but I wouldn't call them good, not by any measure. Private businesses in the U.S. added 42,000 jobs in October of 2025, rebounding after an upwardly revised 29,000 jobs were lost in September and above forecasts for gains of 25,000. Let's point out here that 29,000 number from September, that was an upward revision from a loss of 32,000, so a little bit better there. The 42,000 jobs added, much better than the 25,000 expected. So we can call ADP a beat. It was good news. I use that term loosely. Education and healthcare and trade and transportation utilities led the growth. All right, education and healthcare. All right, we got teaching jobs. That's government payrolls. Healthcare, hardly a sign of economic activity. That's just a function of aging demographics. Trade and transportation, adding jobs. Interesting. I'm guessing warehousing is a big part of that. Everything I've read about the logistics sector says they are cutting jobs at a breakneck pace here. Shout out to Craig Fuller over at FreightWave. So I'm surprised to see trade and transport adding positions here. Utilities adding jobs, adding growth. That's a function of the data center build out and the AI bubble. For the third straight month, though, employers shed jobs in professional business services, in information, and in leisure and hospitality. Meanwhile, pay growth has been largely flat for more than a year, indicating that shifts in supply and demand are balanced, said Dr. Nella Richardson, chief economist at ADP. Man, that last one sucks, guys. Pay growth has been flat for more than a year. Inflation is still 3%, and it ain't coming down, and yet our pay is not going up. Financial repression continues to be a thing. The rate of inflation continues to exceed our raises, meaning life is getting more expensive. You just cannot expect the economy to do well in that scenario. Now, look, here's the ADP numbers going back the last year here. Okay, we had 2 months of negativity in private payrolls, and then we got a little bit of a bounce, but you can see the downward trend here, right? Let's zoom out 3 years. Yep, you can see that downward trend. It is intact. And if you zoom out 5 years, it just looks absolutely dreadful here, guys. Look, in my opinion, the economy has been in recession since 2022, or about the middle of 2022. And if you look here, it was about the middle of 2022 that we saw this start to drop. And it came low. It went below 100,000. And it has stayed there, give or take. Economy's not looking so good. Outside of this AI data center boom, there's really nothing other than government spending supporting this. And, well, let's talk about that data center boom, shall we? Global chip stock rally founders on concerns over valuations. Got this one in Bloomberg this morning. The year's frenetic rally in global semiconductor stocks hit a setback on concerns that valuations for some of the biggest winners have soared too quickly and that gains have been excessive. Shares of AMD were down more than 4% lower in pre-market trading after the chipmaker's guidance failed to meet investors' high expectations. The chip stock slump spread to other markets on Wednesday. In Asia, Taiwan Semiconductor was down 3%. Losses in Samsung dragged South Korea's KOSPI benchmark down 2.9%. Now, that talk of the KOSPI benchmark, it was down even more than that at one point. They triggered the circuit breakers, and they ended up closing down 2.9% off their losses. In Europe, Dutch chip equipment makers ASML Holdings and ASM International each fell 2%. The pullback underscores investors' growing unease over the sector's sky-high valuations. Even though big tech firms are still pouring billions into infrastructure for AI, chip makers have added trillions of dollars in market value since the low in April as investors bet on soaring demand for computing power. Yeah, soaring demand for computing power. You mean artificially inflated demand for computing power, Bloomberg. There's been a lot of concern about the AI trade, said Morgan Stanley strategist Marina Zavalok in a Bloomberg TV interview. We think we will pass this storm and there's more to go in the AI trade. Of course you do. But this isn't the first time that you have weakness and bubble concerns, nor will it be the last. I would say buy the dip now. Much of the rally wasn't about fundamentals, so it makes no sense to say it's value buying. Oh, I'm sorry. I wouldn't say buy the dip now. Much of the rally wasn't about fundamentals, so it makes no sense to say it's a value buy now, said Chaowei Yak, CEO and multi-strategy hedge fund GAO Capital in Singapore. But if some of the big tech names drop 15 to 20%, then maybe we consider. All right, so this guy from GAO or Gao Capital, he's saying don't buy the dip. Valuation is a chief concern for many investors. The Philadelphia Semiconductor Index is priced at 28 times next year's earnings, well above the 10-year average of 19 times. Yeah, stocks are overvalued. We get it. Another question is whether big tech firms like Amazon and Meta will keep spending on compute capacity, even though returns on these investments aren't showing up so far. That's important. They're not making money. They are just burning it. What I've been saying for 2 years, an increasingly complex and interconnected web of transactions between key AI companies has also raised eyebrows. You think that might have raised eyebrows? Gee, who has been saying this for more than 2 years? But now, finally, they're saying it in the mainstream press. Will the dip buyers show up? I don't know. But look, Japan's Nikkei 225 tanks over 2% and Asia markets drop amid AI valuation concerns. Last night when we went to bed, it was a bloodbath in Asia. Not going to read too much into this. I think I covered it in the monologue, guys. But Asia managed to close off the lows. We're just going to have to wait and see if maybe that bottom is in overnight. Are we going to see some dip buying momentum, or is it a dead cat bounce and we go lower? But one of the stocks that is leading the concern this morning is AMD. Their outlook underwhelms investors following the AI-fueled rally. AMD, or Advanced Micro Devices, the main contender to NVIDIA in the AI chip market, failed to impress investors with its revenue forecast after an eye-popping rally sent expectations soaring. Fourth quarter revenue will be roughly $9.6 billion, the company said in a statement Tuesday, though analysts had estimated $9.2 billion on average, so that's a beat, but some projections ranged as high as $9.9 billion. Investors have bet heavily on AMD following blockbuster agreements with OpenAI and Oracle, neither of whom have the money to pay AMD what they've been paying or promising, which plan to use the company's chips in their build-out of artificial intelligence computing. The hope is that AMD can finally crack NVIDIA's dominance in the AI processor market, but Tuesday's outlook signals that AMD's payoff may come slower than some had anticipated. AMD stock down 2.5% ahead of the opening bell, slightly off the lows, but still down $6, $243.90 for AMD. But it's already up 107% year to date. So again, those lofty valuations, are they justified? In my opinion, they are not. Oh, and I just love to talk about this company. Supermicro stock drops on slumping sales and weak earnings. Huh, slumping sales and weak earnings. They seem to have misspelled insane demand there, but I digress. There's Chucky Lang. Oh, I cannot wait to plaster this man's face in handcuffs on your screen one morning, but it is not this day. Supermicro computer shares plunged as much as 10% in extended trading on Tuesday after the server maker issued weaker than expected results for the fiscal first quarter. Earnings per share, 35 cents versus 40 cents expected. That's a miss. Revenue, 5.02 billion versus 6 billion expected. That's a miss. Revenue fell 15% from 5.94 billion a year ago, Supermicro said in a statement. Oh, they forgot to tell us the demand was insane. Revenue down 15%. That's interesting. The report comes about 2 weeks after Supermicro issued preliminary earnings and said it expected revenue of $5 billion for the quarter, down from prior guidance of $6 to $7 billion. Net income fell by more than half to $168.3 million. The demand is insane. That's down from $424.3 million. Yikes, huge miss. In its partial report last month, Supermicro said design win upgrades pushed some expected first quarter revenue to the second quarter. The company said it now expects sales of $10 to $11 billion in the current quarter, above the $7.83 billion average estimate, according to LSEG. All right, so Supermicro's quarter was so bad because next quarter is going to be so awesome. And, well, this company with a documented history of accounting fraud says a thing, so I guess it must be true, right? Supermicro shareholders are not buying it this morning. The stock is down 6.5%. It was down as much as 10% yesterday after initially reporting this, so off the lows here, but still $44.48, down by $3. Year to date, the stock is up 55.5%. Long-term, guys, I think this one is a zero. This company is a fraud. I think it's obvious what they're doing is a fraud. They narrowly avoided delisting by getting BDO to sign off on their books. But the only way they would do that was if they flagged material weaknesses and internal controls over financial reporting, which means the executive team at this company is full of shit. And, well, the stock is down this morning. Speaking of full of it, SoftBank shares plunged 10%, wiping $23 billion in market cap as AI stocks slide on valuation jitters. SoftBank is the crafty financier behind Project Stargate. They're not doing so hot here. Shares of Japan's SoftBank closed 10% lower on Wednesday amid a broader drop in AI-linked companies as investors turn weary of stretched valuations in the market's most crowded trade. SoftBank, which has built a broad portfolio of AI-related investments spanning infrastructure, chips, and application firms, lost about $23 billion in market cap. The group's shares clocked their worst day since April, when shares plunged over 12%. SoftBank has a controlling stake in UK-based Arm Holdings, whose chip designs power mobile and AI processors, and acquired Ampere Computing this year to strengthen its AI data center capabilities. NASDAQ-listed Arm Holdings saw shares drop 4.71% overnight. So SoftBank is another one taking a beating this morning, again, off their lows, down 8. Let's refresh this. They closed down 8.4% at $81.06. But again, year to date, SoftBank stock up 180%. Good God, that's ridiculous. So yeah, sell-off is warranted at these levels. And now this is an interesting one. The first time I've heard of anybody wanting to hedge their data center exposure. Deutsche Bank explores hedges for data center exposure as AI lending booms. Executives are discussing options, including shorting a basket of AI stocks or using derivatives to transfer risk. Deutsche Bank is exploring ways to hedge its exposure to data centers after extending billions of dollars in debt to the sector to keep up with demand for AI and cloud computing. Executives inside the bank have discussed ways to manage its exposure to booming industry as so-called hyperscalers pour hundreds of billions of dollars into building infrastructure for their AI needs that is increasingly funded by debt, debt that is bound to land on your retirement portfolio sooner or later. The German lender is looking at options, including shorting a basket of AI-related stocks that would help mitigate downside risk by betting against companies in the sector. It's also considering buying default protection on some of the debt using derivatives through a transaction known as synthetic risk transfers. By the way, pensions and insurance companies are almost always the targets for those synthetic risk transfers. But if the demand is insane, if we just cannot possibly build enough compute, we need trillions and trillions of dollars to build data centers. Why is one of the biggest banks in the world worried about buying default protection on the debt that is backing that expansion? That's interesting. Not a good morning for the AI stocks. All right, we've also got some interesting developments in the trade war here. The truce appears to be holding. China rolls back and suspends retaliatory measures against some U.S. entities. All right, everybody gives a little and we get along just fine for now. China will remove export control measures against 15 U.S. entities and continue to pause such measures for another 16 entities for a year, effective November 10th, a Commerce Ministry statement showed. China will also remove or suspend for 1 year measures it took against some U.S. entities in March and April when it added them to the unreliable entity list, effective November 10th, according to a separate ministry statement. The removal and suspension of export control measures will allow Chinese exporters to apply for exports of dual-use items to these entities. The other move involving the unreliable entity list will enable domestic firms to apply to conduct transactions with the entities. All right, so the truce is holding. That's the story here, guys. We haven't ruined this one yet. Let's take the win and move on, shall we? We have got earnings from McDonald's this morning. They're saying they missed estimates, but sales are rising amid a challenging environment. So mixed results for McDonald's here. McDonald's on Wednesday fell short of Wall Street expectations, but the company's U.S. restaurants reported better than expected same-store growth. CEO Chris Kempczinski said in a statement that the results are a testament to our ability to deliver sustained growth, even in a challenging environment. For more than a year, McDonald's, long considered a bellwether for the financial health of consumers, has been sounding the alarm about a pullback in restaurant spending, particularly from low-income diners. But the company reported $3.22 in adjusted EPS versus $3.33 expected. That's a miss. Revenue $7.08 billion versus $7.1 billion expected. That's also a miss. But the company's same-store sales increased by 3.6%. That's a reversal from a year ago period's decline of 1.5% and roughly in line with expectations. In the U.S., McDonald's same-store sales increased 2.4%, topping estimates of 1.9%. The company credited growth in average checks, suggesting that diners are paying more for their meals despite the ongoing value wars between fast food chains. In an appeal to budget-conscious consumers, McDonald's bought back its snack wraps for the first time in 9 years, priced them at $3.99. And in September, the chain reintroduced extra value meals, which it last promoted before the vid. All right, so McDonald's 2.4% same-store sales growth, that's not keeping up with inflation, and it's largely driven by price increases, even though we have some price wars going on in fast food. That's interesting here. Now let's look at McDonald's stock. It's up here. The opening bell has rung, up 2.7%. So McDonald's, this is interesting. It's up on a miss, even though we've got AI stocks are down on beats. The market is paying attention to valuations here. That's what this one tells me. McDonald's looking all right. Now we got another restaurant that is doing kind of the opposite here. Cava cuts their sales outlook as fast casual customers pull back. In particular, young consumers not doing good here. Cava Group cut its full-year sales growth target after foot traffic stalled in the third quarter, adding to worrying trends that financially squeezed consumers are foregoing fast casual restaurants. Let's see. Cava, same sales from existing restaurants will grow 3 to 4% this year, down from prior estimates of 4 to 6% growth. The company said in a statement, analysts had projected 4.7%. So we're reducing our growth forecast. They are still growing, but the results came a week after Chipotle Mexican Grill, the largest fast casual chain in the U.S. and a model for Cava's operations, said it was seeing consumers pull back across all income groups. The pressure was most acute among young consumers, a sentiment echoed by Shake Shack. Let's see. Earlier Tuesday, Wingstop cut its sales view for the year, though its shares rallied on the chain's cost savings and accelerated store openings. In the third quarter, Cava's comparable sales grew by 1.9%, below consensus expectations for 2.7%. That expansion was driven primarily from price and customers switching to premium proteins or adding sides, CEO Brett Schulman said in an interview. Foot traffic was approximately flat. There's no question when you look at the data, whether it's consumer sentiment that Gen Z unemployment twice the national average or headwinds facing younger consumers, that there's a challenging environment for consumers, Schulman said. The company is also seeing pressure in the area around Washington, D.C. As the government shutdown stretches into a second month, folks have been impacted by not receiving paychecks in recent weeks. So that's a reminder there, that last paragraph, the government shutdown will affect company earnings. People ain't getting paid. They're not spending money. So that's an important one to keep an eye on. Also, that trend of the young consumer struggling here. Cava shares are off their lows of the morning, currently down 1.33%, off by about 66 cents at $51. This one was down almost 5% at one point this morning, so it's off the lows. It appears the dip buyers are here to show up this morning. We've also got some labor data. IBM to lay off thousands of employees before year end. Another anecdote about more job cuts, this time IBM, and they're trying to AI wash this one. I'm not so sure. International Business Machines is cutting thousands of jobs this quarter, the latest company to shed workers as it seeks to reposition its business in the age of artificial intelligence. The company said the layoffs will affect low single-digit percentage of its total workforce. IBM employs about 270,000 globally. As of the end of 2024, the company didn't further clarify how many people it would cut. I saw some estimates saying 3,000 would be the number, but we don't have a final tally yet. IBM's workforce strategy is driven by having the right people with the right skills, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, the CEO said a thing. IBM joins a growing list of companies shedding workers, propelled by a shift in C-suite offices toward using AI tools and pushing for efficiency among rank-and-file employees. All right, so if you're lucky enough to survive the layoffs, the good news is you're going to get bombarded with work slop that's going to waste even more of your time to clean up every time the stupid chatbot hallucinates an answer and then some lazy worker just has GPT do the work for him, and then he hands it off to you, and it's on you to clean it up. That's great. I'd also add, every time these companies announce that they're laying people off, they say something about AI. But I want to send a shout out to Amanda Goodall at The Jobs Chick on Twitter, who has shown through data that, yeah, maybe they tell you it's AI is why they're laying people off, but their actions say it's actually outsourcing and it's H-1B visas replacing American workers. We have seen that time and time again. Maybe that's what IBM is doing here. Maybe not. But that's what the other ones are doing, that's for sure. And just a reminder, even if they are trying to replace people with AI, the MIT study said 95% of those programs are actually not generating any return on investment. And based on that BetterUp study on WorkSlop, it's actually costing companies millions every year. Oh, this silly bubble. It just cannot pop fast enough. All right, let's talk about the results today. I try not to get too political on this channel. Sometimes it sneaks through anyway. And you know what? It's the day after election night, so we got to talk about it. Democrats win big on election night. Here's the key races. Look, let's summarize it real quick. The Democrats won the governor in New Jersey, largely expected. All right, you could poop in a bag and stamp a D on it, and it can win an election in New Jersey. So that doesn't really surprise me. Now, the Democrats also won the governor's mansion in Virginia. That one was more of a toss-up. That's something of a purple state. Republicans had a chance in Virginia, and they got blown out there. So that's a big L for the Republicans. The other big, big win for Democrats, or at least what they're calling this, like they're even saying it right here, Democrats who won included Zohran Mamdani. Zohran Mamdani beat another Democrat. That wasn't a win for the Democrats. As a matter of fact, Mamdani winning, I think in the long run, is going to be a huge loss for Democrats, because this idiot is going to be a freaking lightning rod for what happens when Democrats take control. A socialist is now the mayor of the financial capital of the world. Let that sink in for a minute, guys. So did Democrats win that election? No. Personally, I think Republicans won that election, because if you think this city went to shit under Bill de Blasio, let me just tell you, Bill de Blasio is holding Zohran Mamdani's beer right now. He is going to, or at least he has said, he's going to let people out of prisons. He's going to do this community policing thing. Oh, I can't imagine. My heart goes out to any of you NYPD guys right now. I can't imagine what your life is going to be like for the next few years. And landlords in New York City, how'd you like to be a building owner in a city where the mayor thinks you shouldn't have to pay rent, that housing is a basic human right? Oh, I'm sure New York City's commercial real estate is going to do just fantastic now that there's going to be more people pooping on the sidewalk, more people robbing the store without consequence, and more people that don't have to pay their rent. Pay attention to a name like Flagstar Bank. That's the company that is the leftovers of New York Community Bank after the rebrand. They're also the biggest owner of subsidized housing in New York City, rent-controlled apartment buildings. They don't own the buildings. They own the debt on the buildings. It's their biggest balance sheet item. Oh, I'm sure they're just going to do fantastic now that Mamdani is in control. But hey, Republicans, you lost another one. Look, you'd expect the incumbent party to lose to a certain extent, but Republicans won nothing last night. The only thing they won was this Mamdani race, and that was just because the radical arm of the party lurched so far to the left, it's a win for Republicans. But other than that, Republicans lost everything that was up for grabs yesterday. Hey, maybe you guys want to actually cut some spending. Maybe you guys want to actually do what you campaigned on for a change, and maybe you won't get your clock cleaned in the midterms. I just throw it out there. But I want to leave you with this one. Shout out to Willem Middlecoop, who posted this one, and my moderator, Mish, who found it. I think this is an appropriate quote for the occasion. A democracy cannot exist as a permanent form of government. It can only exist until the majority discovers it can vote itself largesse out of the public treasury. After that, the majority always votes for the candidate promising the most benefits. With the result, the democracy collapses because of the loose fiscal policy ensuing, always to be followed by a dictatorship and then a monarchy. That was Tocqueville. And man, if that doesn't summarize that New York governor's race, just watch what happens. Again, the financial capital of the world, and a socialist is running it. 2020's bingo, if ever there was one. Shout out to Willem Middlecoop and Mr. Tocqueville and Mr. Mish for sending us that one. And I just want to say thank you very much to Mr. Big Mouth Barry BMB. Thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. He has just become a YouTube member. Thank you so much, Barry, for supporting the channel. Just a reminder, guys, you get a free super chat with your membership every month, so feel free to use that, and I will read and respond to your questions on the air, as I will now do for Big Mouth Barry, who says, amazing Kreskin, you and Burry agree on NVIDIA, and you correctly called crypto winter. What's next, soothsayer? AI crash, FBI investigates round tripping. Don't hold your breath on FBI investigating round tripping. I would say what's next, look for the government to try to bail out this bubble. Look for President Trump to announce taking a stake in some data center company. We must win the AI arms race for national security. He needs that bubble to stay intact. He got his clock cleaned yesterday in the elections, and he has gotten into bed with crypto and AI bros to try to keep this bubble inflated so he could be like, look at my stock market, best economy ever. So President Trump needs this bubble to stay inflated for his political agenda to continue. So that is what I think is the next thing. The government will try to blow into that bubble to keep it inflated. I don't think it's going to work. Also, keep a real close eye on those cockroaches. Carvana is a name I keep hearing. Subprime auto is getting worse and worse, more and more fraud, and yet Carvana reports blowout earnings. Gag me with that garbage. That's a name to watch as well. Also, let's throw Affirm in there. That's another one that came up in my talk with Joe Brown yesterday. Thank you very much, Big Mouth Barry. Although I would point out on the AI bubble, I feel like vindication is near, but I have not yet been vindicated. The bubble hasn't burst. It really just feels like a formality at this point, though, doesn't it? Thanks again, Barry. Arbitrage, thank you, sir. You see, Arbitrage, I see what you did there. Thank you very much for the generosity this morning. He says, my heart goes out to the people of NYC, but this is going to be the greatest can't-look-away train wreck ever. I would love to disagree with you, but oh my God, you think things are bad in that city now? Good God. Good God. It's going to be hilarious to watch. It's like the beginning of Meet the Fockers and just how awkward and awful it is. And you're right. You just can't look away. You just can't look away. But it's a shame because there are people, decent people living in that city who just want to, don't want anything to do with this left-right bullshit. They just want to go about their lives. I just want to be able to ride the freaking subway or the bus and not get assaulted or pooped on. It's going to be a little harder. All right. So, guys, calisthenics, rule number one is cardio. Work on your footwork. You know, you're juking side to side, dodging excrement on the sidewalk like a running back in a football game. I think you'll find those will pay off in the long run. And maybe don't spend money on good shoes in New York City for a while. Just throw it out there. Definitely take your shoes off before you come in the house. Arbitrage, thank you so much for supporting the channel. And thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melonheads this morning. I appreciate that. Wait, did I get up? No. Dadnabbit, stop the music. Screwed up my sign-off again. Frank Hancock, I almost missed you. I'm sorry, Frank. I almost missed you there, brother. He says, bank co-worker laid off for company-wide Epic Inc. IE AI. Is he saying like an F and AI thing? Okay, a bank coworker was laid off for a company-wide AI thing. India taking work. Yep, there's the outsourcing. AI versus copyright pop bubble. Downside risk to gold. Copyright is interesting because intellectual property is one of the things that could pop the AI bubble. It hasn't yet. They've already pretty much stolen the collective works of every artist that ever lived. There are some ongoing lawsuits. Most of them, the AI companies have lost. Some of them, they have managed to eke out a win. But that is a risk. You're right to flag it. A bank worker laid off. Oh, man. Can you imagine what the chatbots are going to do to bank balance sheets? Real, I mean, ask it to count the R's in Strawberry and then ask it how it can avoid a banking crisis. Oh, great. That's just great. Now, downside risk to gold. Look, if we do get a large deflationary crash, gold would sell off along with everything else. People raise cash. They've got profits in gold that they can take and use to pay margin calls, things like that. So if we were to get a sudden violent volatility event, gold will not be spared. Nothing will be spared. That being said, the policy response to every market volatility event is always to turn on the money printers, and gold will rocket coming out of that. So short-term buying opportunity if that happens, but I think long-term, gold, and to be honest, silver, I think, is still the only asset in the world that is like significantly undervalued is silver. And that's assuming gold is only fairly valued. I think gold is going to go higher. It's going to drag silver along with it. And eventually silver will leapfrog and pass gold. That gold to silver ratio is still sitting around 83 here. That is historically undervalued versus gold. Thank you very much, Frank. Appreciate the super chat, the support of the channel. Tom Dillon says, we need to seize the means of production, says Mamdani. Yeah, good luck with that. Let's turn the means of production over to a, he's about 30 years old, former rapper, never held a job in the private sector. Oh, yeah. He's going to do wonderful things for that city. What do you got, 10 million people live on that island or something like that? I don't know the population of the city, but, oh, it's going to be a train wreck. I don't know what to tell you, Tom. Thank you, though, for being a Melonhead member for 1 month. And thank you, Daniel, for being a new member and for joining the Melonheads. I appreciate that very much, Daniel. Daniel, thank you for supporting the channel. Welcome to the Melon Patch. Is it safe to do the sign-off? I think it's safe to do the sign-off now. All right. Thank you guys so much for having your coffee with the Melonheads this morning. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button right next to it for the algorithm, should you feel so inclined. I appreciate the generosity and the super chats, everybody, as well as you magnanimous Melonheads on YouTube, Patreon, Buy Me a Coffee. Appreciate everything you guys do for the channel. Links down below, should you feel so inclined. Check out that video I did with Joe Brown yesterday. You're going to want to see that one. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. I love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.